Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Undue Burden Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On June 27, 2016, the Supreme Court decided Whole Woman's Health v. Hellerstedt. Whole Woman's Health and other Texas abortion providers sued Texas officials seeking declaratory and injunctive relief against a state law requiring that physicians who perform abortions have admitting privileges at a hospital within 30 miles of the location where the abortion is performed, and requiring that abortion facilities satisfy the standards set for ambulatory surgical centers. The district court enjoined enforcement of both requirements, as applied to all women seeking a pre-viability abortion, and as applied to abortion facilities in McAllen and El Paso, but dismissed claims that the law violated equal protection and affected an unlawful delegation. The U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit affirmed dismissal of the equal protection and unlawful delegation claims, and affirmed but modified the injunction of the ASC and admitting privileges requirements as applied to the McAllen facility. The court vacated the district court's injunction of the admitting privileges requirement as applied to all women seeking a pre-viability abortion, however, and reversed the injunction of the ASC requirement on its face and in the context of medication abortion, as well as the injunction of the admitting privileges and ASC requirements as applied to the El Paso facility. As a result, the Texas law was to remain in effect statewide, except for the ASC requirement as applied to the Whole Woman's Health abortion facility in McAllen, and the admitting privileges requirement as applied to a particular doctor when working at the McAllen facility. The U.S. Supreme Court, however, stayed issuance of the mandate on the Fifth Circuit's judgment, ultimately reversing that judgment by a vote of 5-3 and remanding the case. Justice Breyer delivered the opinion of the court, holding that petitioners' constitutional claims were not barred by res judicata, and that both the admitting privileges and the ambulatory surgical center requirements place a substantial obstacle in the path of women seeking a pre-viability abortion, constituted an undue burden on abortion access, and violated the Constitution. Justice Breyer's majority opinion was joined by Justices Kennedy, Ginsburg, Sotomayor, and Kagan. Justice Ginsburg filed a concurring opinion. Justice Thomas filed a dissenting opinion. Justice Alito filed a dissenting opinion in which Chief Justice Roberts and Justice Thomas joined. To discuss the case, we have Roger Severino, who is the director of the DeVos Center for Religion and Civil Society at the Heritage Foundation. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Mr. Severino.
This was one of the blockbuster decisions of this highly unusual term. The bottom line was this was a 5-3 decision that was reversing the Fifth Circuit decision and striking down Texas's abortion clinic safety regulations. The safety regulations are surgical standards. They're called ambulatory surgical center standards, which would have required abortion clinics to meet standards that ambulatory surgical centers generally follow. And this generally covers invasive surgery. So think colonoscopy, plastic surgery, things that aren't necessarily requiring hospitalization, but do require a higher standard because of the risk of things like infection, et cetera. And it includes a lot of common sense provisions, such as widths in hallways have to be a certain width in order to allow a gurney to go through in case of emergency, standards for safety, including fire protection, nurse certification, the number of soap dispensers, all sorts of things to a filtration of the air system to make sure that infection is low and that safety protocols are kept so that if something does go wrong in an abortion, which they do go wrong, there will be actual help for the women involved so that any mishap will be limited in terms of its danger to the health and safety of women. Already we see that 200 women are hospitalized in Texas every year due to complications after abortions, and there was a amicus brief submitted by 3,300 women who had suffered physical harm, psychological harm, trauma because of abortions that go wrong. The argument made by the state of Texas is that this is not like a tooth cleaning. This is an actual invasive surgery. And if you think about what actually goes on in abortion, early or late term, you're entering into a place that normally you do not enter unless you have a very good reason, sterilization with any instrument when you're involved with medical procedures. Another element of HB 2, which was a Texas law, had to do with doctors having admitting privileges in nearby hospitals within 30 miles. And that's to guarantee continuity of care such that if something does go wrong, then the doctor will be able to hand the file over straight from the patient from one facility to another seamlessly to have that continuity of care so that the women's health results are improved. Those are the interests involved from the state of Texas's point of view. That's what they argued. And interestingly, the intent of these laws was not questioned by the majority. Even though laws were struck down, this was written by Justice Breyer, and he signaled at oral argument that he was not going to question the motivation of the state of Texas. Justice Breyer said, it looks like they're trying to act in furtherance of women's health, and that's good enough for me. And the question then turned as to whether or not that law was actually going to be effective or pose an undue burden to a woman's access to abortion. Only one person wrote otherwise, and that was Justice Ginsburg in a separate concurrence that she wrote alone, where she, it was a short piece, but she effectively said that she questioned Texas's motivation as to why it was passing these laws, suggesting it was designed to limit abortion access and not further women's health. But again, that was only one vote, whereas the majority went along and said, didn't mention anything about the actual motivation behind these laws. So there is a silver lining there in that at least on the undue burden prong when it's related to purpose, if it's an illegitimate purpose, that was not one of the bases used to strike down the laws. The basis was the effects, and it did it in an interesting way. So the Texas argued that the Casey undue burden test had really two parts. One was a rational basis component, meaning so long as there's a legitimate basis supporting the law, in this case, the increased health and safety of women, then you get past the purpose prong, and then you go straight to the effects. And then the question is whether there is an actual undue burden regardless of the intent of the state acting. So once you're past the intent portion, it's rational basis, then you go into the undue burden test, which by itself is kind of hazy. What is an undue burden? Scalia was very adamant in saying that undue burden means whatever five justices of the Supreme Court say, because it's a contentless standard. It was fleshed out a bit in the partial birth abortion case, though. Gonzalez versus Carhart said that when there are disputed issues of medical fact when it comes to safety of the abortion procedures, then legislatures would be able to get deference under those circumstances. With this new decision, and Heller said, the court effectively undoes that holding that preceded it. So it really modifies the Casey test. The amount of deference that was being given to legislatures has really been scaled back by this decision. It is effectively saying it's a matter for the courts to decide, and the courts will be able to do their own fact-finding and come to their own conclusions about the state of medicine when it comes to abortion. This is a move kind of going back to the early Roe v. Wade days, where the courts were hyperactive in striking down every law and second-guessing everything the states were doing. And by Casey, it had moved away. It had gone away from a strict scrutiny framework and the trimester framework and moved to viability and undue burden and allowed certain restrictions to come in so long as it was a legitimate health and safety. And also the interest of human life was also put up to the forefront. Another note to keep in mind is that this case really didn't mention much of anything about the unborn human life that is lost in every abortion. That was one of the main interests that led the court to move away from the Roe v. Wade strict scrutiny framework and towards Casey, but that wasn't mentioned at all, and that silence is at least noteworthy. Now, the actual law at issue dealt with clinic regulations, but people should remember that HB2 also included a 20-week abortion ban, which was not challenged, which would have touched on the life issues and the value of life. So this was focused pretty squarely on just the health and safety issue of the side of the equation when it comes to Casey. Justice Thomas, in dissent, and when you're reading these opinions, they are quite long, and I would recommend you start with Justice Thomas's opinion in dissent. It's shorter, it gets to the heart of the matter, and then you'll be able to see the thickness of the majority opinion, which is 43 pages, with a better perspective. You'll be able to get the highlights better. So that's my tip on going through these opinions. So the main nub of the whole case turned on whether these health and safety regulations did enough such that it would justify any burdening on abortion access. That's how the court reconceptualized Casey, which is a move away from what Texas was arguing and what effectively Casey said and what the dissents say. The dissents say so long as you get past the hurdle of the health interests, then the question as to the burden is standalone. It's a standalone question. What is the effect on women? And you don't go and create a balancing test to weigh the governmental interest compared to the amount of the burden. But that's precisely what the court did. So undue burden now means, contrary to Casey and Gonzalez, it now means it is a balancing test. So whenever a state moves to further the health and safety of women undergoing abortions, whatever negative consequences that has to clinic access is now put on scales. Unfortunately, there was very little guidance as to how you calibrate those scales at all. It was a grab bag of facts related to this particular case that the court pointed to. It would point to things like a percentage increase in the number of women who would drive farther than 150 miles to reach a local clinic, or 200 miles, or 250 miles, and each percentage increase. And then threw out some static numbers. This is the number of thousands of women who would be impacted. So things of these sorts were put forward. And then on the other side of the equation, the balance was trying to gauge how medically effective these regulations were going to be, combined to predicting the number of clinics that would be closed because of these regulations. So it's very difficult ex ante for any state government to come up with these figures and to have a really good sense of what any health and safety regulation impact will be. It puts state legislatures in a terrible bind because they have to look through a crystal ball because the court has taken away their deference, and it would require tremendous fact-finding by a state legislature to put forward enough facts saying these are precisely the number of women, perhaps, that would be saved from these types of complications in this number, in this effect, whereas you can't use common sense. If you have sterile environments that are much more sterile than before, you would expect there'd be less infections. So the court has taken away that discretion to make those sorts of judgments and threw that discretion onto the lap of the courts. So now the courts get to use their common sense judgment. And in fact, the Supreme Court used the phrase common sense. It's common sense that we would expect a lot of clinics to close. It's common sense that we would expect that existing clinics would not be able to take on the additional business from the clinics that did close. It's common sense to think that this expensive clinics are expensive to open and clinics would not open. So the courts now get to use their common sense, but the legislatures cannot. And I think it inverts the process that was there before this decision and really puts the states in a difficult position to get through these new hurdles that they didn't face before. Doesn't mean they can't do it. Doesn't mean they shouldn't attempt it. But it becomes much more difficult. And then the question arises, what if you get a friendly district court judge and finds opposite facts and says these do help health and safety as women, and I credit this expert and I discredit the abortion clinic experts. What happens in those circumstances? Is now a reviewing court going to revisit the issue based on Hellerstedt? It's hard to say because the court here gave deference to the district court. And if it's a district court's judgment call, a district court could go the other way. And it would be hard for the Supreme Court to say, no, you got it wrong, but this court got it correctly. And this brings up Justice Thomas's point. He says, effectively, the Supreme Court is now turning into a medical review board for the entire country when it comes to abortion and only abortion. Because it doesn't get into these questions to what is medically effective, how many women are going to be hurt possibly or not. Yet it did credit the district court saying, effectively, these regulations don't do much at all to further women's health. And that's rather striking to go that far, to really say it doesn't do much at all. And I think the district court said it doesn't do anything in additional in terms of health and safety. And that's really a strong statement to make. And I'm surprised to see the Supreme Court go that far to credit one district court judge based on the testimony mostly of one expert who made some of these findings. Some interesting things you should keep in mind. A lot of the discussion focused early on at oral argument and Justice Alito's dissenting opinion on res judicata and claim preclusion. There's a whole lot of discussion about whether or not the facial challenges were preserved properly or not. There was a first round of litigation where a facial challenge was dismissed, and they sued again, many of the same parties, and didn't raise it the second time around. And they did not petition for cert the first time around, yet the Supreme Court snatched it up and said, yes, we will allow you to do a facial challenge again. You get a second bite of the apple. And this is going to wreak havoc on civil procedure. Normally, you have a sense of finality if you litigate an issue all the way through, especially an issue regarding facial challenges, which presupposes if you win as a state, then you're in the clear, and now you move on to as-applied challenges. But the court is saying no. If facts on the ground are different when you do the as-applied challenge, you could use that to infer a facial challenge and bring that back to life and then strike down a bill or a law in its entirety. And the dissents really went after the majority for taking this very aggressive move. And it is a bit of a exemplar of abortion distortion. So when it comes to abortion cases, the Supreme Court does some very curious things. So here we already have clinics that are suing, not women seeking abortions. So that's already a little unusual, and Justice Thomas mentioned that. This is such a fundamental right recognized in the Constitution. Where are the women suing? Why is it only clinics suing? Yet clinics have the standing to sue. I just mentioned the facial challenge issue and claim preclusion. And then the court did not sever any of the provisions it found offensive. Yet the Texas law had a super-duper severability clause, the most thorough severability clause you will ever see. It said any sentence and any phrase of this law shall be severable independent of the others. Yet the Supreme Court majority said, we're going to treat it as a unified whole. And both laws, the ambulatory surgical center portion and the admitting privileges portion, we're going to treat them both as working in unison and separately, being harmful and undue burdens. And within those laws, you can't peel off any piece. So things related to soap dispensers, sorry, you can't have just that regulation in or width of hallways or one or filtration units or the number of fire extinguishers you could have. None of those could actually be severed and allowed to stand, even though common sense, to use the court's phrase, common sense would tell us that at least some of those regulations would not impact abortion access at all. And in fact, you would think that if you have increased standards, it would improve women's health outcomes, which also is striking why the court would say it probably wouldn't, when Planned Parenthood already meets ASC standards with their mega clinics in Texas and opened three new ones. They grew by 50%. They have nine. They do thousands upon thousands of abortions, and they have ambulatory surgical center standards already voluntarily meeting them, which may explain why Planned Parenthood did not sue and was not part of this case, because they're sweeping in all the business of all these clinics, substandard clinics that were closing. So the main question comes down to this. These clinics that are closing, would they not be replaced by Planned Parenthoods or other clinics? And what is the overall impact on women's access, and the court is putting it, compared to the benefit to women's health? And in fact, the law was designed to shut down some clinics, because the background of this was, of course, the Gosnell scandal, and this was the Philadelphia clinic called the House of Horrors, where Kermit Gosnell was doing late-term abortions, killing children born alive, and a woman died because of unsanitary conditions and lack of regulations, and they couldn't fit a gurney through the hallway, and that was one of the reasons she died. The grand jury in that case recommended that the state of Pennsylvania adopt ASC standards. The state of Texas noticed and then went to adopt ASC standards on its own as well. Yet the Supreme Court, the majority just dismissed the Gosnell angle and saying that had Texas just, or Philadelphia, enforced existing laws, then it wouldn't have been an issue. And that's what Texas has to do here. Instead of passing new regulations, just simply enforce what you have, and the problem is solved. This has very interesting echoes to what Second Amendment supporters argue all the time. They say that existing laws should be enough. If you enforce existing laws, you don't need to add new bans. You don't need to take away people's Second Amendment right. And it'll be very interesting to see if in the next Second Amendment case, we'll see these quotes from Breyer and one made by Ginsburg as well come back to be call them out for hypocrisy if they don't accept this logic when it comes to Second Amendment rights, but they will accept it when it comes to the issue of abortion. The idea that abortion should be safe, legal, and rare, this is a question as to the rare part of it. So Texas wants to make it safe. The question as to legality, of course, that is the central question of the culture wars. The rarity prong, and this is where the court is saying we want abortion to be as openly available as possible, and we are willing to say that these health standards, you could have lower health standards so long as abortion access increases and stays at a high level. You can't have a result of shutting down substandard clinics because that'll limit the number of options, and we're going to consider that an undue burden because we're now putting it on the scales, and we say that the health benefits based on fact-finding by one district judge are not adequate to support the limitations of access for women. Therefore, the law is struck down. I think this is a difficult result to justify given the previous holdings of the court, and it makes it difficult for the state to continue to regulate abortion in order for this to further the health and safety in women.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.